I can click. So hello, welcome to this session on migrating from Config Manager 07 to Config Manager 2012. My name is Kent Aggerlund, and as you can hear from my accent, I'm not from Nevada. I'm from Copenhagen in Denmark. I used to be a Config Manager MVP, but as of this morning, I'm an Enterprise Client Management MVP instead. Yeah, fancy title. Congratulations to me. On me here, next to me on stage, I have my good buddy, Chris.
My name is Chris Nackers. I am also formerly a Config Manager MVP, now an Enterprise Client Management MVP. I'm sure they'll change it again in a couple of years. So I'm also a Chief System Management Architect / Principal Consultant / Owner / Head Honcho. Vacations are really easy to get approved when you run your own company. It's pretty awesome. So I actually run my own consulting company, and Kent's got a consulting company as well. So this session is really based on our experiences as consultants in the field over the last year. We were trying to figure out how many migrations we had done between us. I think when we submitted the session several months ago, we had done almost 25 between the two of us. So we figured hopefully we have something valuable to offer on the subject. So, and then we're both certified professionals and all that fun stuff as well.
And by the way, what we're demoing in here, that's not necessarily what Microsoft is recommending, but it works.
So high level overview as far as, you know, it's kind of set the stage for some of the stuff we're going to talk about from an from an agenda standpoint. You know, we're going to talk about some of the requirements you need to be aware of as you want to migrate from 2007 to 2012. So requirements in terms of where your site system needs to be and some of those other things. We're going to talk quite a bit about how to migrate sites and distribution points, and we'll demo a little bit on that. And then we'll also discuss the permissions in terms of the actual permissions you need as far as how to actually migrate content from your existing 2007 hierarchy into the 2012 hierarchy. And there's a few different ways to handle that. So we'll cover some of that stuff as far as what you can do from the easy route that'll just work every time, as opposed to, you know, in some of the larger environments where permissions are a little bit more restricted and they want to know, well, what's the absolute bare minimum. We'll cover that stuff for you guys so you know the absolute bare minimum if you have to deal with some, we'll say, picky security people. And then we're going to cover in a little bit more detail the actual specific objects that you're going to probably concern from a migration standpoint. So unfortunately, because of time constraints and everything else, we can't cover everything. It's just too much information to cover in the time that we have. So we're going to hit the big hitters, the issues where you're going to most likely have things that you're going to be aware of, and that's what we're going to try and cover. But we might not cover everything that's going to be in there. So we're going to definitely talk about collections. We're going to talk about packages. That's probably one of the main things that most people are focused on if they're going to go from 2007 to 2012 is, you know, hey, I've got 400 or 500 packages in 2007. I don't want to recreate those, so I really want to try and migrate those across. So we're going to talk about how to do that and some of the things you need to be aware of as you're migrating the content from 2007 into 2012. We're going to talk about task sequences from an OSD perspective. You know, hopefully if you're using OSD to do Windows 7 deployments or Windows XP, nobody did Vista, so I can't imagine anyone here actually did that. But primarily if you had XP, if you still need to support XP as well as any work you've done up to this point on Windows 7, we're going to talk about what you need to be aware of to move those task sequences across or the content in those task sequences so that you don't have to completely start over on that. We're going to talk about security in terms of, okay, now with 2012 we have role-based administration. Security in 2007 was a pain in the butt. It was really hard to do. It was a lot of challenges. Quite frankly, it's a cakewalk in 2012. Once you wrap your head around it, you spend a little bit of time with it, it's very, very easy to separate out and the security in 2012 and delegate it down so that you can actually have people view the things they want to do. And one of the things that we do in 2012 is the console will actually filter down to the objects you only have permission to, which is really nice. So when somebody logs in, they're not seeing stuff going, well, how come I can see this, but I can't do something with it? You can avoid a lot of those questions, which is really nice. We're going to talk about software updates, our recommendations as far as how to deal with software updates from a migration standpoint. We're going to talk about, really, actually, this is the only slide probably where we really talk about clients. Client migration actually is probably one of the easiest things to do from a migration standpoint. We really haven't had a lot of issues with those. It's a fairly easy process, so when we really looked at stuff and said, okay, what are we going to migrate and what are we going to talk about, we decided not to spend too much time on that because really, if you just install the 2012 client on top of 2007, it upgrades very cleanly. We'll upgrade the old version of Endpoint and everything else. So there really isn't necessarily a lot to talk about from an actual upgrade standpoint, other than maybe some of your site stuff.
One thing, though, is you need to understand boundary groups. Yep. You need to understand when to use boundary groups for site assignment, and more important, when not to use them. And I mean, I'm pretty sure now, I don't know all of you in here, but I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of you in the room here do not need to configure a boundary group for site assignment in 2012. So you don't really have to, you don't have to worry too much about the overlapping boundaries. That's why Chris is saying it's actually, it's pretty straightforward. Of course, if you mess that up, then you will have clients connecting and...
That can be more challenging.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of your actual client process, whether you want to use Client Cushion 2012, which a lot of us don't recommend, but it does work on occasion. If you want to use, you know, a logon script or a startup script or whatever, any of those methods, if you basically just push out the 2012 client over top of your existing 2007 clients, you're going to have at least 95% success criteria. I don't think I've ever had less than 95% at a client migration. It really does work pretty well. So that's kind of a nice piece. We're going to talk about reports. So a big key for that is in 2007 we have web-based IIS reports, and then we also had SRS reports as well, but not a lot of people actually went to SRS. In 2012 we only have SRS-based reports. So if you've taken the time to develop a lot of custom reports in 2007 and they're in IIS, you now have to deal with, hey, 2012 is SRS only, so we're going to show how to get that stuff across and make that life a little easier so you don't have to recreate all those reports. And then the last thing we'll talk about is a huge thing with OSD is drivers, and then what's the best, our recommendations as far as the best way to handle drivers as well.
So first off, we need to, from a high level thing, we just need to configure a migration in here. So there are a few things you need to know about. You need to be in Service Pack 2. If you're not, that's just weird. It has been out for years. If you want to migrate from an existing 2012 environment, you can actually migrate from Service Pack 1 to Service Pack 1. So that's pretty neat information, especially for those of you who have a huge test environment. You can test all your objects, and then you can just basically migrate all of them over to your production environment. And then Chris mentioned something about the permissions. Setting up the administrator will work. I mean, it always works because it has the permission, required permission in CM07 and definitely also in CM12. But the thing is, when you request administrator access to do that as a consultant, you actually look like a fool. So we need to figure out what are the minimum requirements, what are the minimum permissions needed for this. Some best practice, we are going to migrate from a single to a single site. I've done a lot of migrations. I've migrated from 125 sites into a single site. It can be done. There's really not that many reasons why you should have multiple primary sites in 2012. And I know all of you are thinking, okay, I've heard this before and maybe taking notes. And then some of you are actually forgetting those notes when you're doing your design, because I get calls, I get mails saying, okay, but we have this specific requirement in our environment because we're so special. And everybody's special, but you can be special in a single primary site. Don't be special with a CAS and two primary sites. Working with CM12, you need to change the way you're thinking about objects. You need to change the way you're thinking about collections. You need to change your mindset. It's not just a new version of Config Manager. I mean, from 07 to 12, we actually have 5 years. It's almost a brand new product. And especially when you're doing your design, your initial design, forget about what you have. Especially for the what I call the limiting collections. Think about that, drink some coffee, think a little more about that as well. And I'll hopefully cover all that. Then another thing, when we come in as consultants, we are not allowed to break any existing service. So we need to make sure that this is actually a read-only process. We need to make sure that those two environments can actually be run side by side. So we need to plan for that. For instance, it would be a pretty dumb idea if you start by setting up a new Pixie server. in 2012 because you want to test that functionality, and boom, suddenly nothing works in CMO 7. The great thing is that CMO 7 and CMO 12 can happily coexist, because we will not have any overlapping boundaries. We are not setting up side assignments or anything like that in CM12. But we always need to bear that in mind. Then we have some considerations about our network traffic. As Chris mentioned, we really worry about our packages. And one thing is getting our packages across to CM12, but another thing is all the packages that we already have in our remote locations. We are scared to death about them sometimes. Other companies, they don't really care, but a lot of organizations, they that would be a huge thing if they have to redistribute 250 gigabytes data there. So we need to plan for that. And we also need to have a plan B for that. Overlapping boundaries, I already covered that. There is no reason for you to have a boundary group for site assignment. Those of you who do not know what a boundary group is, I will actually demonstrate that a little later. But the only thing we need, or the only reason why we have boundary groups in CM12 in a single site environment, is actually to locate our content. So when the client needs to find the nearest distribution point. Otherwise, you can just assign your client as you install it. In CM07, we are used to use SMS site codes equal auto. Don't do that. I mean, in CM12, you have a single site. SMS site code equals PS1, and you're good. No clients will ever try to do anything else. We will not publish the information to the system management container and stuff like that. And by doing that, you won't have CM07 clients trying to connect to your CM12 environment. It's not a big bang migration. I have never, ever been in a project where we actually migrated everything. That it simply does not happen. I mean, first off, there is stuff that we don't want to migrate. Chris mentioned the software updates. I really want to build that from scratch again, because I want to rethink the way that I'm doing that in CM12. It has changed, and it's really not that big of a deal. Maybe I have some packages that I want to distribute to remote locations, but I could actually pre-stage those packages.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, again on that, I don't think there's any client we've ever worked with where we've migrated everything. To quote Brian sitting in the front row, we don't want your crusty old packages. You know, a lot of times we want new things we move across. And I've never gone in and had a single client that was like, well, I need every single collection and I need every single package. Chances are you probably had you've had that 2007 site stood up for several years, and there's stuff in there that you probably haven't touched in several years, and there's no point in bringing that stuff across to 2012. So we really want to be selective about what we're migrating across, what you're actually going to use in 2012.
Yeah. So one thing you could do is actually figure out when you ran the advertisement the last time, and then say, okay, I don't want to migrate anything that we haven't installed for the last six months or something like that. And it's not done in a day, so you need to plan for that. Of course, some environments, it's easy. You have 200 devices, and you can do it all maybe in one day. But most of you, you need to plan for having CM07 and CM12 running side by side for quite a while. So with that, let's go to the first demo. And that was that demo. Any questions? So the first thing we really want to set up is we basically just want to specify the migration in here. So I want to set up my source hierarchy. When setting up my source hierarchy, I want to migrate from multiple sites. You just specify the central site that you have in your CMO7 environment. And the one that I have right here is called CMO1. I can specify a user account, so that user account needs some access to the provider, and I also need an account that actually have access to the database. The kind of permissions that I require actually depends on what I want to migrate. So if I just want to migrate my packages and stuff like that, all my metadata, read permission is good enough. But if I also want to do some DB upgrades, then I actually also need to, this account actually needs to have access to modify on my site in CMO7. It also needs to be able to delete distribution points in CMO7. So if I just go to my CMO7 environment here, remember the console?
I cringe every time I see it.
You do?
Yes.
So if I look at the account here, then what I've granted this account, this is the migration account that I'm going to use, and I actually just have read, modify, and delete on the site object. Only needed if you want to do DB upgrade. So if you want to upgrade your distribution points, otherwise you don't need modify and delete. And otherwise I just have read. So this is all you need to request if you want to have a migration account.
Which I'm going to stop you because you didn't on site, so you're going to break my demo. You had it. You didn't have it on site.
I didn't have it on site,
no.
But then again, that's your demo, so I don't care.
Thanks, Kent. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah, you're good.
I think you did it on purpose, just to see if I would notice.
So the thing I need is in here. I need modify. I need delete. And there you go. Another thing that I also need, if I go into SQL, again, you can ask for an account that is sysadmin, and I mean, it will work, and you'll look like a fool. And some environments you will get it, other environments you will just call for another consultant. So what I have in here, I have my migration accounts. And my migration account is just a data reader. So if you look at my user mappings, here you go. So it's a data reader. DB owner, is that really needed? Nope. We had some discussions about this, but the only thing you need in here is the data reader. You don't need the data DB owner. You don't need to be a sysadmin or anything like that. Just the data reader. So the question is this account actually the one making the database? No, you need to set up the database before. So you need to have CM12 up and running before.
This is just the account to connect back to your old environment. So,
and
in the TechNet documentation isn't the clearest. So we had some discussions with the product team actually this week because we were trying to figure out the minimum permissions and to make sure we gave you guys the exact permissions and. The documentation is not very clear, so they're actually going to update it in the next week or two, because it's not maybe not exactly what it should be.
It definitely is not. So that's it, and then we actually also need execute on the database in here. So you need just assign a database or DB reader, and then execute permissions on the database, and you should actually be good to go. You want me to triple check that, or do you actually trust me?
Again, this is the minimum required permissions to perform an upgrade. Again, if all you're concerned with is moving content into 2012, you don't need the site modify and delete permissions. But if you want to do the distribution point upgrades or secondary site upgrades, then we need modify and delete on site because we'll actually go ahead and uninstall those distribution points and secondary sites. So we need more rights than just read to do that.
So by knowing that, I can go in here and specify my account. I mean. In many of the migrations that we have done, we have actually just been using the site server system account because that works as well. But in here, I can go and specify my account. I've already pre-created the account for the sake of the demo in here. But otherwise, I would just go in and say, if it was not created, use a new account, and then you just specify the account that you have in Active Directory.
So, you know, obviously, you could throw a domain admin in here. Some security guys would freak out, but that would give you the right permissions. If you're going to use the computer account, then you just need to remember that computer account is referencing the 2012 site server account. So on your 2007 box in the SQL database, you need to grant the 2012 site server access. You need to grant access to the 2012 site server in the Config Manager 2007 console explicitly. So there are a few ways to do it, but most of the time if you're in a larger environment, the security guys want bare minimum, and so that's what we're showing you here is this is your bare minimum that you need to submit for migrations to be successful.
So what I just did here was I just set up the gathering. That's just a read-only process. So I'm not doing anything on the CMO7 database. And what I did in the background while Chris was doing a little talking was I opened up the migration manager control log file, because that log file will be your friend. If something goes wrong in the gathering process, it will just throw an error at you and you go like, oh, what now? In here, it will tell you almost exactly what went wrong. So it could be permissions with the account. It could be actually your CMO7 database that is kind of corrupted. I've seen that. I've seen CMO7 where everything kind of looked okay, but they actually had some collections in the database that they didn't have in the UI. So when I tried to do the gathering in here, it just blew up. It didn't do anything. But it told me which stored procedure it actually failed on. And then I could go into CMO7, look at the policy provider, and there I could actually figure out, okay, this specific stored procedure is trying to update this collection. But that collection doesn't exist. It only existed in one table in the database. So we went in there, removed that. Of course, you cannot go into the database and edit stuff in there. So it was in test. And after that, it actually ran okay. So now I've moved my metadata over. I really haven't done anything, but out here I can see the number of objects that I have information about. So we have, it's a small environment, just a demo environment, 200 objects in here. And if I didn't share any distribution points, otherwise they would be down here on this tab. So with that, let's just move back here. The next thing, and this is actually to me one of the key things when you're doing your migration, that is your collections. You use your collections all the time. And I know that different people are saying different stuff about collections. Maybe you don't need them. Maybe you only need a few. And there is no right or wrong. You need to figure out what works in your environment. But in my environment, I need collections. I need collections to control my security. So I will definitely have collections to control my role-based administration. I call those collections my limiting collections, and I'll explain that in a demo. I also need folders. And not everybody agree with me. Some say that folders are evil, they're just polluting your console, and why would you need a folder? You can actually search in the console, and the search works perfectly. See, the thing is that I need folders because we can do stuff with folders. We can manipulate the objects that we have in a folder. So for instance, if I have some collections in a specific folder, then we can write a PowerShell script that goes in and change the properties of all those collections in that specific folder. If you don't have your collections in folders, then hopefully you have a naming standard. And guess what? A naming standard lasts like 15 minutes. So I do not rely on that one. So I really need my folders. It's not like I want to have 1,000 folders, but I just want to have a few folders. And then,
me personally, I'm not a huge folder person, so Kent's been doing his best to convert me for the last few months, and another MVP sitting in the front row, Brian, him and I don't like him either. And so there's a few reasons why. So from the scripting standpoint and stuff, it does make sense. The biggest thing that you need to be aware of with folders is they're not a securable object. You can't control security against the folder. So if you are, the way your 2012 console filters down, you need to be aware of that. Like, you know, the example I always use is where we ran into some issues is an education client. A lot of times they don't just have central IT, they'll have the School of Business and the School of Science and et cetera. So if you go and create a folder for School of Business and School of Science, and then, okay, we're going to put all the collections for science in their folder and all the stuff in business, when I log in as a School of Business, I can see the science folder. I can't see what's in there, but I can put my own collections in there. When the science guys log in, they won't see those collections, because they can't see the collection, but because the folders aren't secure objects. So you can get into some interesting behavior, and then they'll go in, they'll try to delete the folder, and it says, well, you can't delete the folder because it's empty. But as far as their view is concerned, it is empty. So again, they're not securable objects. So you need to be aware of that. So that's a use case scenario. You might not want to separate things out from that perspective for folders. But for some of the stuff like Kent's going to demo, it does make sense to have folders because you can do some really cool stuff from a scripting perspective because we can filter down and say, hey, everything in this folder, we're going to do something with. Yeah. So it, you just got to be careful with them.
So one thing I learned during the first project is really keep the folder names generic.
Yep.
Don't call them something like this is all the secret stuff. So don't call them department names or names of schools or anything like that. Call it software. Because when I go into that software folder, I can see all the software collections that I actually have permissions to. So that would work. That wouldn't confuse anyone. So we want to first figure out our limiting collections. As those of you who have been working with CM12, you know when you create a new collection, you need to limit it to another collection. And you really do not want to limit it to all systems. That's like right after installing a CAS, that's number two on my list of five issues you really don't want to do. So you need to create some limiting collections. So these are all my servers. These are all my servers in data center one. These are all my desktops. These are all my desktops in this location and so on. And then those might be limited to all systems. So you want to make sure that those are secure. Another thing is when you create a new collection, that collection, if it's a server collection, will be limited to all your servers in data center one. There is a refresh schedule on those collections. And what if you don't control that? So what if your data center one collection is actually getting refreshed every 7 days, which is the default value, and the other one is getting refreshed every 10 minutes? I mean, that's just, in my opinion, a huge design flaw. You need to be able to control that, and you need to know when you're refreshing your collections. Then I also do it. I use collections to control my features. So I will always have a collection or a folder for my software updates, for my OSD, all of that stuff. I use it for role-based administration, definitely. I will not migrate any limiting collections. I will create new ones. Because as Chris mentioned, in CM07 and security really doesn't go hand in hand. I know I said something else when I was working with CM07, but now I've seen the light.
It was the best we had at the time, and now we have a different solution, so it's like, oh yeah, it did suck pretty bad.
Yeah, and those of you who are wondering, so what if I have multiple sites, will the security actually replicate? You don't have to worry about that because you don't have multiple sites.
You have a single site.
You have a single site, and if you actually do have multiple sites, then yes, security is actually global data, and global data is replicated between all sites that you have. So the collection refresh, it's extremely important. You really need to plan for that. Another thing, you want to limit the use of folders. I totally agree on that. So you want to have some folders, but not many. You want to understand folders. So what I mean is, you want to understand that you can search across folders. You want to understand what you can do with your folders. And then a lot of experienced CM07 administrators, we have been creating sub-selected queries, and we have been creating a lot of those. So we have some very, very complex queries in CM07. Guess what? You really don't have to do that in CM12. You might still have some use cases where you need to create a subselect, but if you plan your limiting collections correctly, then you can actually just, when you create your new collections, can I call them child collections, even though they're not? But when you're creating your new collections, you can create them simply by adding in exclude rules or include rules, and it makes it so much easier for everybody to manage that environment. I mean, I cannot count the number of times where I've had to change the same collection query in 15 different collections. Now I don't have to do that. Just make the change in my limiting collection and boom, it will be updated everywhere. Top collections. So those of you who use top collections in CM07, and there are a lot of use cases for that. I use them a lot, so I'll create some child collections. That just replace all of them with include rules and you would be good to go. So let's move on here to the next demo. So just to kind of explain what I'm talking about in here. So this is still my CM07 environment. And yes, I know we only want to see CM12, but in any migration project, it's important to understand what you're migrating from. Otherwise, you will not be able to succeed when you're doing your migration. So in here, I have a software update management collection hierarchy. I have some child collections. I have one called SUM, Software Update Management, Servers Automatic. And then because I couldn't create folders in CM07, I named them folders just to tell my fellow administrators that, hey, this is an empty collection. And down there, I have some child collections. If I want to recreate that in CM12, it would look a bit like this. So I have my software updates. Notice that I do not have any child collections, anything like that. I still have my server automatic. It has some reference collections in here. It has 5. If I go in here and look at the properties, that was not the properties. Let's just do it again. Look at the membership rules. Then you will see this is extremely easy. I have some include rules. There you go. So I'm including maintenance window 1, maintenance window 2, and so on and so forth. And then I have an exclude rule. So let's just do it like this so we can see all of it. So all the members that I'm adding into this specific collection here will automatically be excluded, because every single time we do a patch management project, 85% of all the servers, we can just automatically restart them and patch them, but we always have like these few servers where we need some manual attention. So I'll just do it like that. In CM07, I had to create some sub-selected queries in here. And again, if I just go down here, another thing you want to do is you want to make sure that you have a collection called non-managed. So when we talk about patch management, how about the servers that you do not have in your AD group? So for instance, I have an AD group called maintenance window 1, maintenance window 2, and so on. But how about the servers that you don't know about? It's actually a huge risk if you forget to patch, let's say, 85 servers. So I just create a new collection in here where I'm actually using the exclude rule and say, okay, I want to exclude all the servers that I know about. So just give me a list of them that I do not know about. And what I do is I configure a maintenance window and say, okay, you can patch these servers every Sunday from 8 in the morning to 8 in the evening. And guess what? The first time I do that, all the service owners come running and say, hey, what are you doing? I say, well, I'm patching your server. You didn't include it into one of the predefined maintenance window. And they will do that straight after. So for me, because I'm responsible for this, I really want to make sure that that this happens. One more thing. About my collections. So if I go into another collection folder here, the VM Monstra folder, this is the company name, and in here you can see we have all our servers in data center 1, we have all in data center 2, and then we start creating some more complex queries. So we have all of them, including in this data center, but not in here, and all HP servers and so on, because we need that for different purposes. If I look at this collection query here, look at the membership rules. So just show my query language. Then you will see in here that I have a subselect query. So please do not select the ones that I have in here. And I could have 20, 30, 50 of those collections. And every time I have to change something, I have to go in and do it manually every time, or create a script. But then again, if you create a script solution and you mess up, you better go home. So I need to know what I have. Now I know what I have. Now I can start doing my collection migration. And migrating the collections, the only thing I have to do in here is create a migration job. So that's actually the easy part. Knowing where you're coming from and knowing where you're going to, that's the hard part, trust me. So I will create a migration job in here. And I want to create a collection. Oops. So my collection via Monstra, select the job type collection here. I will just select my via Monstra. It will automatically select all the sub collections that I have. And if I have any limited collections, it will select those as well. I do not want to migrate any objects that are associated. So I don't want to migrate any advertisements or packages or stuff like that. You could do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I just kind of like to migrate one service at a time. And I don't want to do a big bang before I've actually tested stuff. It's just because I'm a chicken. I want to assign my objects to a security scope. So this is actually just being assigned to the default security scope. Collection limiting, since I only have a single primary site here, don't have to worry about this, but I could have the same collections in multiple child sites in CMO7, and then I would just say, okay, migrate into this single collection. Site code replacement. So what it actually did was it analyzed my queries and say, hey, your old site code is called AO1. I can see that in one of your collections you're actually using that site code. It won't work. Because one thing we didn't mention is that you don't want to set up a new CM12 site with the exact same site code. That's number 3 on the list. So I'm migrating. Let's just start it up and we'll just run it right now. After all, it's not that many. So now I can monitor my migration different ways, objects and jobs. If I click here, this one here will start to migrate, and I just have to refresh this one. Usually I just go in here once the migration is done to kind of figure out what collections I got migrated, because I will not be able to get all of my collections. Some will fail because of the complex queries that I have, so I won't be able to migrate those. Others will just be skipped because it will create a folder instead. So I need to know that. Maybe that will actually break a service. So my software update parent collection will now be migrated over as a folder. But I don't need a folder for that service. I actually need a collection. So let's see down here, available to migrate. So these here failed. So my all HP servers in data center 1 and not in data center 2 and so on, the one with the subselect query, they failed. Wow. That's not good. So I need to go in and kind of create them manually. I could go in and modify the code in CMO7, but I'm not allowed to touch anything in CMO7 because that's a running service. And this should really be a read-only process. So for my limiting collections, what I would be doing is I would create them from scratch. So here I have what I call limiting collections in my small environment. So I have my developer computers, I have some QA computers, I have all my servers, all my workstations. These are the only collections that I create as the overall global administrator. From here on, I will delegate controls. I will say, Peter, you're now the desktop administrator. You'll get access to all VMMonster workstations. That's your responsibility, and you will only get access to that. So now the thing is, if I look at these collections, look at the properties in here. So if all other collections are depending on this one, then there is a few things that I want to set. For instance, use incremental updates. By default, it will update a new collection every 7 days. So incremental updates, that will be like every 5 minutes or 10 minutes. It's really awesome. So why don't we just go in and configure that on all our collections? I don't know if you have anything to add there.
According to TechNet, it's limited to the first 200 collections. but it's not a hard stop. So it's much more of a performance thing. Some collections are going to increment differently. But the moral of the story is if you have a lot of collections, should you run through and enable this in every single collection you have? No.
Don't do that.
You really want to do it on the collections that you're really concerned with. So again, it's sometimes pulling teeth to get answers from the product team, but it is documented in TechNet that it's the first 200 collections, but it's not a hard stop, so you can go to 205, but they haven't really said a lot as far as, okay, if you've got 300 of them, other than I'm sure it's going to impact your site performance substantially because of that incremental connection update, it's going to be very, very fast, quick. So with incremental updates, and then you've got incremental updates on all your AD discoveries, you can get objects within the collection in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If you have all the incrementals enabled, which is really cool because that was not quite the case in 2007, but it is something to be aware of. It's not something you want to check in every single collection. So just a lot of times your primary collections or your top level collections that you're limiting to is the ones you want to update and then have that trickle down effect.
So the thing right now is that let's say I've migrated 500 collections. What is the refresh schedule for those collections? I don't know. It will just inherit those settings. But I kind of want to control them right now. And this is where PowerShell comes in handy. And by the way, all these scripts here, they will be made available for you. So the first thing I do is I just run a script that will go in and change the refresh for all of my collections. Why? Because now I know what I'm dealing with. Okay, now I know we will upgrade refresh all of our collections around midnight every day. Maybe I don't want to do that for my limiting collections. Maybe I want to enable incremental updates for those. Maybe I want to update them not around midnight, but maybe 10 o'clock in the evening because everybody's going to look into those. So we actually have a few PowerShell scripts in here. So the next one, what this will do is, if you just zoom in here. So this one will just set the start time to 11 o'clock. So I can go in and say, okay, for the collections I have in this specific folder, just refresh them every, 11 o'clock every single day. And this is where I use my folder name. So you can see here, I don't know if you, hopefully you can see it, but I have dash folder name and then the name of my folder, limiting. There is no such folder. Nope. So what do I do now? I'll change the PowerShell script. I actually change the folder name. Limiting. There you go. So now it's just configuring the refresh schedule for those. So now again, I have complete control. And failure to do this and failure to really understand this is actually can have some pretty high consequences because I thought that all of these servers would get the deployment ready and actually go install the applications last night, but they didn't because the refresh actually didn't occur. Another thing we can also do is, if I just go back in here, I can actually also with this PowerShell script here, I can use dash incremental. So I can enable incremental updates only for the collections that I have here in this specific folder. And as Chris mentioned, there is some recommendations, 200 collections, but who actually counts that? What I say is that you have your folder with your limiting collections, and that is the only place where you actually use incremental. There might be some use cases with OSD where you also want to enable it, but as a general rule, I don't enable them. Why would I? I mean, I don't install 1,000 new servers every day. So it's actually normally a pretty steady environment that I have. So. With that, let's just move on.
Back to me, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can get the clicker.
So migrating sites and distribution points. So this is probably a big key of where a lot of our work is spent as far as, again, we want to try and consolidate some of your sites and get from your potentially complex 2007 environment to that single site server in 2012. And a lot of the reason that we can do that is because of some of our infrastructure changes in 2012. So the things that we need to be aware of if you do want to migrate your distribution points into 2012 or upgrade them, rather, as opposed to migrate, is you need to be aware of branch distribution points. Do you have those in your environment? We can actually upgrade those, so we can move those directly into 2012. So in 2012, we no longer have BDPs. We just call everything a distribution point. So Vista Service Pack 1 and above and Server 2003 and above is a DP. It doesn't matter. We don't treat them any different. Obviously, if it's a client OS, we don't support Pixie on it because it doesn't have WDS. But from a functionality standpoint, that DP is no different than a Server 2003 or 2008 distribution point, which is actually really nice. So it's a lot easier to manage. An additional consideration is secondary sites. So in 2007, it's very common to have secondary sites because the only way we could throttle traffic was with the secondary site. You couldn't throttle a standard distribution point. In 2012, we can throttle a standard distribution point. So you really need to think about secondary sites in terms of 2012 is, do I still need them? Or can I get by with just a standard distribution point now because I can throttle it? So how are we going to handle those? Are we just going to upgrade them and keep them as a secondary site, or are we going to just convert them to a standard distribution point? And then again, if you have additional standard distribution points, which for the most part, we really haven't ran into this with too many clients because very few people had standard distribution points in 2012 that were in remote locations because you couldn't throttle them. So most of the time it was a secondary site, or you had distribution points co-located with the primary site, which we can't upgrade. But you might have had another distribution point in the data center to help support a local environment. And in so that case, maybe that's a DP that we're looking at. So best practices and advice. So a big one is do you even want to upgrade a DP? Do you really care that much about it? So if you don't care about sending that packages back across the WAN in your 2012 environment, then don't upgrade them. Build a brand new distribution point in 2012 and then resend your content. You know, if you do have remote locations and you are very concerned with the fact that, okay, I've got 300 gigs of data in that remote location, I don't want to resend that, then you might want to look at upgrading that existing distribution point or secondary site in that remote location. But there's plenty of clients we worked with that just said, you know what, I don't really care that much about sending the traffic down. Let's just build new DPs, and I don't want to upgrade that particular site. So sometimes it can be a mix and match. You don't necessarily have to upgrade every single distribution point or secondary site you have. Maybe it's certain locations you want to upgrade, and other locations you don't really care. So we're just going to build a new DP, and we'll just resend down the content and have a nice day. Another thing is replacing site servers. So again, with a lot of the infrastructure changes in 2012, we want to try and consolidate your infrastructure and get you down to a single site. And again, like I just talked about before, is do you really need secondary sites anymore? You know, you might not. So instead of a secondary site, which now in 2012, secondary sites require SQL. They did in 2007. So now if you're going to stand up a secondary site in 2012, we do need SQL. We do support SQL Express or SQL Enterprise or standard. Well, you would never do Enterprise, but some people, I've seen it. But you really would do standard or SQL Express. So that is a concern. It's like, hey, if I'm going to stand up the secondary site, I do need to have SQL in that location as well now. So do you really need that? Can we just get by with a standard distribution point that we can now throttle? And usually the answer for that is it kind of depends on, there is no hard-coded guide where it says, okay, if you have 50 clients and a T1, then you need a secondary site. It kind of depends. Every client's different. Every situation is different. So you kind of have to look at what the pipe of that WAN link is, how many clients we're going to be managing, what type of traffic we're going to be managing, and then based on that, we will determine, okay, yeah, we might want a secondary site in the location, or you know what, we can get by with a standard distribution point. We have a 250 limit of DPs per site, so there is a consideration there for maybe you want to have a secondary site. If you're a larger environment that's highly distributed, we can only have 250 DPs assigned to a site server, so we might need to stand up a secondary site so that we can go beyond that 250 DP limit. So that's another consideration. And then I'll just flip through these quick. So other considerations you need to be aware of as we're trying to do this migration process is, with 2012, we also have additional functionality. So we have branch cache available to us if you have the appropriate infrastructure in place. We have this new cloud-based DP option in Windows Azure, however you want to say it. So everyone says it different. So we also have the ability to pull DPs. So now we have the ability for a pull DP to be, we can configure our DPs to do, to be set up as a pull DP as opposed to a standard DP. So we can help offload some of that load from the primary site. But the one caveat to the pull DPs is that they don't honor the rate limits, your throttling and scheduling. So that's something you need to be aware of. If you're going to configure pull DPs in that remote location, they're not going to honor those throttlings and rate limit schedules. So that's something to be aware of. You know, another option that we've had, and I've had a few clients where we did this, was they decided rather than upgrading that remote location with that site server, instead maybe we need to build up a site server in our data center and then ship it there. Now, if a lot of times in Europe, that can be a huge challenge when you're trying to ship to different countries. In the US, it's not necessarily a big of an issue for us to ship to a server to another server, or to ship a server to another state. So that's another issue, or another way to address that as well. So maybe rather than upgrading the DP that we have, we're just going to build up a new one. We'll send all the content to it in our data center. We'll box it up, ship it down. There we go. We got a new clean site server. We didn't have to worry about the upgrade process. Something to be aware of in the upgrade process. I think of all the migrations I've done, I don't think I've ever had 100% success criteria on upgrading DPs and secondary sites. So just be aware of that. So kind of what we got here is prepare for the unexpected. That was the last little blank one I had in there. So you just never know what's going to happen. So you need a plan B. You need a plan C. Hopefully you don't need a plan Z. Hopefully you don't get that far down. But, you know, and maybe your plan B is, okay, we're going to stand up a cloud-based DP. Or maybe we're just going to build a server and ship it down. But you need to have a backup plan because, like I said, I've had plenty of clients I worked with where we had 10 secondary sites, 8 of them upgraded fine, 2 of them were like, nope, sorry, have a nice day. You know, and you spend hours and hours troubleshooting, and eventually like, no, we'll just stand up a new site server. So again, it's probably not going to be 100% success criteria for us, so you need to be aware that in some locations you might need to have a backup plan.
One thing there, though, is the pre-staging the feature in CM12 works. Those of you who have been using preload package on site, you have a lot to thank John for, because he actually did a blog post on that, and without that blog post, I mean, it was impossible to get that feature to work. Here it actually works. I've seen some issues if you just create one huge pre-stage file, so I usually break them up. But it's really so much easier, and it works on a standalone DP. You don't have to set up a secondary site for this to work. And the extract content, which is the name of the feature, is already loaded on every DP. So all you need to do is just create PKGX packages or files in the console, and you can do that for all your content, your update packages, your images, and so on and so forth. So that would be kind of the plan B, maybe. Question? So the question is if the branch cache actually counts against that number, but the 250, that is a 250, and if you add in branch cache or if you add in pull DPs, that the count is still 250. So yeah, that
was still at 250.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you do want to upgrade DPs, if you remember in the previous demo, Kent had gone through and configured this migration, and we kind of skipped over in the bottom here, but we've got this. Let's see if I can use this Danish keyboard.
Yeah, but the mouse is the same.
It looks like a Danish mouse to me. So in the very bottom, when you're configuring that migration account, on the very bottom there's this enable DP sharing at remote site. So this box needs to be checked before we can upgrade DPs. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and check this box. And then we'll immediately initiate another data gathering cycle, because now we said, okay, you want us to look at your DP. So we're going to go back to your 2007 site server that we connected to, and let's suck in all the DP information. And then what we'll see here is on that shared distribution points, now we can actually see the distribution points that are available to us to upgrade. That's pretty quick. And that's not good. There we go. So you can see that we've got three DPs. So we've got CM01, CM01 DP01, and CM01 secondary site 01. So CM01 is the 2007 primary site server. Obviously, that's not eligible for upgrade. Then we've got a remote DP, which is the DP01, which you can see here over on the right side, that we've got eligible for upgrade. And then the one right below it is the secondary site. So that secondary site is eligible for an upgrade as well.
Oh, one question, what kind of roles do you have on the secondary side? What roles do you have installed in CMO 7?
It's a trick question.
Well, that's actually, you need to go, well, let me do it. So we can,
it's a Danish keyboard, I can't get it. I don't know what he's getting. So something that we ran into, and we were, again, trying to get clarification from the product team, which can be interesting. So there was a bug. They said it was prior to RTM, but most of us swear it was still there. So, for example, if you had a Pixie service point on your secondary site in 07, the DP would show up as, or the secondary site would show up as not eligible for upgrade. It's magically fixed in SP1. So if you're on SP1, we couldn't find a single site role that would block us. So, and that was always the way it was supposed to be. There wasn't any site role that was supposed to block you from upgrading a secondary site, but the Pixie service point would block you previously. So in this case, you can see that we've got distribution point, we've got a proxy management point, we have the Pixie service point, and then it's just your standard secondary site. But like again, in allegedly it was pre-RTM, but I swear it was an RTM because we were both talking about it, and I know I've seen it at other sites, and we've got another guy shaking his head. So if you had a Pixie, you'd have to go to all your secondary sites, remove the Pixie service point, we're all rerun data gathering, and then magically it was, hey, now we're eligible for upgrade. So, but in SP1, it appears to be fixed, even though there wasn't a bug. So if you do decide that you want to do so, the other thing to show you too is the minute you do this, enable the DP upgrading, in your, what'll happen is we'll actually create, we'll actually go ahead and create boundary groups for your 07 distribution points, because now we're sharing that DP between the two environments. We need to have a boundary group so that 2012 clients could potentially access that content if you wanted to.
And it's extremely important to know that these boundaries here has nothing to do with site assignment.
Yep.
So you won't have to worry about overlapping boundaries or anything like that. It's only for content location, nothing else.
So we're gonna go ahead and take this remote DP and upgrade it. And this is actually a fairly straightforward process. So we're going to pick, hey, we're going to upgrade this to our new 2012 site. So again, none of you should have more than a single site in 2012, so you'll have a single site code to pick from on the dropdown. And then we're going to go ahead and use the site server account to install the system. And then we're going to check the install and configure IIS if required by the configuration manager. So we'll go ahead, if for some reason IIS isn't configured on that, we'll go ahead and reconfigure it. We'll install remote differential compression. We will not install bits. That's the only thing we won't install. So this wizard is the exact same as when you're setting up a DP. So generally speaking, we always check this box because it's never going to hurt anything. And if there are any issues, we'll go ahead and fix them. So it's always a good idea to check that box. It's kind of a nice fail-safe.
It installs IRES on the other box, so it depends
on the old
box. Yeah. So the question is, what kind of version of information server depends on the distribution point on the remote DP.
No, it depends. It's going to install and configure IIS on whatever that remote site server. So the IIS version obviously depends on that box. So. And then if you do care, as far as one of the nice things we can do is we can actually pick the primary content location. So in 2007 days, you'd have to go through and do all the no SMS on drive files to say, okay, try and control where the drive is going to be. So one nice thing about 2012 DPs is we can actually say, you know, hey, I want it to go to D or C or E or whatever you have for a data drive. So we can say this is where our primary content location is going to be, which is kind of nice.
So it can be on a floppy, so like the A drive?
I don't think that's going to work too well for you. And then we can set the minimum space reserve for that drive. So by default, it's 50 megs. We could say, well, maybe we want, at least a gig available. Danish keyboard. See, I can't do it. 1,000. So we'll go through that. That's not entirely true.
So the question is, if it will never run out of disk space on our C drive, well.
So you're picking the primary location, and it's going to use that until that space threshold is met. and then we're going to go back to the next available drive with the most free space.
So
then you're...
Exactly.
Yes,
so as a follow-up on that one, the no SMS on drive SMS file, that's still one of your good friends.
Yep. So it's still applicable in 2012. The nice thing is at least we can pick the initial drive. So
the option for reserving the space, what happens when you reach that threshold?
Then we'll automatically fail to the next drive with the most free space that meets that threshold. So once we get below that, then we'll say, okay, we can no longer use this drive. Let's go to the next drive that meets that criteria. And then that's where we'll put another content location. We'll start putting packages.
So the question, next question is, how do we actually know it happens? You will see you have the content library folder suddenly on the second drive. So you want to make sure that you have some monitoring and stuff like that. But remember, the content library in CM12, it's a single instance store. So, I mean, chances that you're running out is not as high as it is in CM07, because you will only store the same file once, regardless of how many times you're using that file.
Yep.
But it can still happen. I mean, definitely still
happen. And then the next thing you can set is obviously, if this is a server-based system, then we can configure Pixie settings. If this happens to be a client-based OS, this is kind of an irrelevant checkbox. So we can go through and configure Pixie at this time or add it later. So instead of Pixie being a separate site role, it's now a property of the DP. So that's another 2012 configuration change. Content validation, we can go ahead and configure. I'm going to kind of, for the sake of time, we're going to skip through a few of these. And so basically I've gone ahead and said, okay, you know what, go back to this CM01, DP01. Let's go ahead and get this upgraded. And then I'm going to go ahead and turn right around and kick off the secondary site as well.
After the upgrade, distribution point is still on SharePoint, right? So server was 2007 and...
Nope.
So the question is, after the upgrade? I mean, after the upgrade, your CM07 clients are doomed. So you want to make sure that you have migrated all your clients at this point. It's a pretty good question, because you will never ever be able to migrate 100% of all your clients. Some will, for whatever reason, still be running CM07. So those you might want to say, okay, they can fall back to the data center where you still have a shared DP. So you need to plan for that. That's absolutely.
And so once you've gone ahead and done this on your DPs, under this migration node, you'll see there's distribution point migration, and then you can see the two listed. So currently on the DP01, we're updating the binaries. And then on the secondary site, we are pending secondary site installation. So what will actually happen in the background is we're going to go over, we're going to basically kick off the secondary site installation, and then we will wait for the next data gathering cycle to determine whether or not the secondary site's been installed before we proceed with the actual DP upgrade.
So the quick, can you repeat your question, please? This secondary, so the question is if we have any issues with SCCM R3 and uninstalling secondary sites. This is actually this is actually running R3, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that issue, actually.
No, I haven't seen that issue in upgrading secondary sites. So.
Yep. And then you can see actually right away the DP01 completed successfully. So a non-secondary site DP or a branch distribution point happens very quickly. And actually, I've had really, really good success with, ironically, BDPs.
Sorry.
Upgrade very well. And remote DPs,
whatever.
Do as well. Secondary sites is usually where it's very, very hit and miss. Another question?
The question is, if it's upgrading it to a CM12 secondary site? No, it's upgrading it to a CM12 distribution point. Because you don't need the same amount of secondary sites in CM12, because we can control throttling on the DPs in CM12, which we could not do in CM07. So for those of you who have secondary sites today in 07, 95% of you have a secondary site before, because you want to control the content, right? And we can do that now with a standalone DP. That was a long answer, but the answer is no.
Yeah, it just becomes a standard 2012 DP. Because again, now we can throttle though, so you might not want a secondary site. So.
So yeah, that's, and now it becomes a little bit tricky. So if I just repeat you, so if I want to get a secondary site out there, how do I actually do that? So what I have done is I have installed the secondary site. And when I did the migration of the distribution of the other, of the old secondary site, instead of assigning it or attaching it to my primary site, I attached it to the new secondary site. And Chrissy showed you how there was a drop-down box in there where you could say, hey, please attach it to PS1. So we just attach that to PS2. I know that I need two boxes out there, but hey, it works. And then after that, I can just distribute the content because then I have to distribute the content library locally. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, and then so I just flipped over quick to the secondary site. So you can see in the setup log, we're actually going through and uninstalling that secondary site. Obviously, this takes a while, so we won't be able to show you that one all the way through to the, from a demo standpoint. But you can see, obviously, that the other DP upgraded very, very quickly. Secondary site takes a while. And that's part of the reason we wait for that next gathering cycle. So in, I think it's 4 hours is probably what we have to do by default. So in 4 hours, we'll run our data gathering and say, okay, has the secondary site been uninstalled? And you'll actually see it. If you go back to your old 7 console, it'll actually disappear. And then once we see, okay, yep, it's done, then we'll upgrade it to a DP. Correct. When a DP is, so the question was, when you enable shared distribution points, you can use it in, it'll coexist in 07 and 2012, and both clients in 07 and 2012 can access content on that DP. So yeah, that's the whole point. It's to help transition that upgrade process.
We are like 10 minutes from lunch.
So we're gonna have to hold questions to the end so we can try.
We will stay here after the session.
Yeah, we'll absolutely stay to answer questions and stuff since it's lunch. We're kind of, you guys are somewhat fortunate. If you don't like food, you can stay and answer questions.
So. And you don't like food? So migrating packages, a few things in here. First, everybody that I've been working with, they've been attending training, learned a lot about the application model, and they're just extremely high about that. So we want to get that in place. See, your main concern when you're migrating stuff is that it actually works just like it worked in CMO7, and your packages will work just like they did in the old environment. So my advice is get your packages over, make sure that your OSD process works, because that's actually one of the primary features that we have. Once that is done, once you have kind of the same service, then you can start to think about migrating your packages into applications, because that requires a new way of thinking, and it could actually delay the project quite a bit if you try to do that in phase one. There is also stuff about the source files. How many of you in here actually have your source files on the primary site server?
Do you have them configured as a local drive or UNC? How many have local drive configurations? A couple. So most of you UNC. Okay.
So this is absolutely normal. I usually say something like 35-40% have the files on the CMO7 server. You use a UNC for all your packages? Right. You think you use a UNC for all your packages, but actually you don't know. There will be some packages where you actually have them stored on the D drive. The thing is, we don't know, but it will break when we're doing the migration. So we need to know about that. Then I have one in here, bullet saying continue service, because is it a good idea to go into CMO7 and update all my source files on my existing packages if I have 300 distribution points?
Nope.
It's actually a very bad idea, because what will happen is that you will refresh all of those packages on all of your DPs. So what happens with the service that you have to continue in CMO7? You create a new package. I mean, you can go home. You can actually take a little week's vacation, and then hopefully by the end of the week, that one will be processed. So we will do it after we have migrated the package. Limit task sequences. A lot of us have been using task sequences in CMO7 because we could do all this wonderful stuff with the task sequences. Guess what? Now we can do kind of the same with global conditions, the requirement rules, and the app model. Advertisements, Chris? That's like your, do we want to migrate them?
Yep.
Short answer is yes. When we migrate the advertisements, what my biggest concern is always is, oh, is it actually going to reinstall the packages? But it's not. It will be migrated. It will be disabled. So
yep.
I'm sorry, you
caught me reading something. So yeah, the advertisements. That's actually, we kind of talked about it as we were going through our migrations, always queuing up for the demo here, and it was really interesting because half of our clients didn't even bother migrating advertisements. They wanted to redo them. And then I had a few clients that did. So the one thing you need to be aware of is if you do move your advertisements across, they will come across disabled. So you'll have to go into every single program and re-enable them. So something to be aware of. So if you move 300 advertisements, you need to go through and enable 300 programs. So it's something to be aware of. I'm sure, I don't know with the commandlets now, with SP1, there's probably a way to do it.
Sure. So there was a question about, do we have a script for that? You know what? There is a PowerShell session today at 4:30. There is a PowerShell birth of a feather tomorrow evening. So for those of you who are doing nothing in Vegas Wednesday night, 8:30, come to the session. So I'm just quickly going to migrate some objects in here, just a few demos. So I'll be migrating my packages. And I won't migrate all of them, so let me just migrate my Adobe packages and some of the other packages that I have. Of course, I won't migrate this one because that's the CMO7 client hotfix. When I'm migrating my packages, I have an assigned owner, or that's the site that actually owns the content. I don't worry about that because I just have a single primary site. Security scope, I'm pretty worried about that. So let's say that I'm migrating all my developer packages first, or maybe these are the packages that are being used by my desktop team. You want to make sure that you have your scopes created before you start the actual migration. Otherwise, you will have to go in and invent some scripts that can assign it and stuff like that. So I'm clicking next, everything goes okay, clicking next and finish, and there was actually one little checkbox where I was just too eager and I didn't uncheck that. And that was, do you want to migrate all the folders? I go like, yeah, sure. When I went to one customer, and what they had was they had a folder for every single package. I want to limit that. So when I got the content over in Config Manager, I actually had to go in, remove the package from each of the folders before I could delete the folders. I was paid by the hour, so no, it wasn't that fun. But what we did to kind of solve that issue is when you have your packages or when you have any other object, you can actually search. So I could just do a search and say, hey, I want to search throughout all my subfolders. I don't want to do anything else. Just list all the packages that I have in here. I did assign a security scope. So I could actually go in and say, hey, I want to list my security scopes in here. Already have that. Just a screen resolution. So the next thing I can do is, hey, I want to go in and group by my security scopes. So group by the security scopes, and it will nicely group all my objects here. So I have my developers. I have all the other ones. Let's just take the desktop ones. So it was pretty easy for me to go in, select the desktop ones, and then move those packages to a desktop folder. Once I have done that, let's just say this is the desktop folder, call it other. Once I have that, I had a PowerShell script that would actually go in and query and list all my empty folders. So you can see I have all of these empty folders, developers, production, and so on. And then I can go in and say, well, I want to delete all of those, and then it will just go in and delete all of those empty folders. It saved me hours of work, but then again, it also costed me a lot of money. The second thing we want to, and we are almost running out of time, but I have just one more thing I want to demo. That is the source files. So we have something in here, a freeware tool that we call the Package Source Changer. And if I run this one, it will actually list all the objects that I have. So the only thing, just accept the license, it's free. So that's all we need to know. Configuration, just punch in the name of my site server. CMO2, save that. And then I can list the packages or the source locations that I'm using. So these are a list of all the source locations that are being used in my environment. And I have never, ever seen a customer that only used UNC path. There is always a D colon or E colon somewhere. We just forgot about it. So what I do in here is, after I've migrated the packages, because I'm not touching the existing environment, I'm selecting. And then I say, okay, find this one, replace it with that one, select the packages that I'm actually using, and then I can just go in and cherry pick the packages, save, and I can start the upgrade. And I don't care if it has to go out and refresh the distribution points, because I'm in the migration phase right now, so I have maybe just one, two distribution points in my CM12 environment. It's not live, so I don't care about that traffic. The last demo in here would be my reports. So as Chris mentioned in the agenda, we also want to migrate reports. But the thing is, we are using classic ASP reports in CMO7. So in order for us to migrate those, you first need to install SQL reporting services in CMO7. Then you can do the migration there. So you will just migrate them to a SQL reporting services report. After you have done that, then you can actually go in and use a community tool like this one here, which is developed by a guy called Pascal. So what I do in here is I say, well, please connect to my old SQL reporting server. I did that. Here are my reports. So I really would like to migrate all of these reports, the custom reports that I have, and please migrate them to this specific folder, and then just synchronize. Not only will it migrate the reports, it will actually also update the data source. So I have the source and I have the destination data source. So it will save me, again, hours and hours of work. This is really a brilliant tool. So I would just go ahead and start the synchronization process and it would synchronize the reports. So we know that the documents say that you cannot migrate reports, but that's not true. You can actually do that.
You didn't leave me a lot of time, Ken.
No. Oh. I'm so sorry about that. Just do it like that pretty quickly.
The quick slide. So this is the quick version. So from an OSD perspective, so the only other thing we didn't talk about before I get into the OSD is software updates. Our recommendation, move your update list, forget everything else. So that's the only thing you really care about. You care about the update list you've created that says, these are the updates I know I distributed and I approved, and this is what I would deal with. When I've worked with clients and we've tried to move across your existing deployments and packages, you get some really funky behavior and you pretty much end up having a lot of times, you don't know what's in those deployment packages, how many expired and superseded updates are in there that you have, there's no point in moving that stuff over. So simply take your update list that you created in 2007, move those across, re-download your updates and redistribute them, because the clients already have had those updates distributed to them. They're already patched, they'll just come back compliant, you're good to go. So that is probably our recommendation from a software update point. And that, in the migrations I've done, that is what works the best. Just move that piece, leave everything else behind. Otherwise, you'll spend days and hours troubleshooting weird issues with things that report back with random errors and unknown errors, and it's just not worth it. So from an OSD perspective, you went all the way through. So from an OSD perspective, obviously, if you were certainly using this in 2007, typically speaking, you probably spent a significant amount of time engineering and creating these task sequences and other things. You might not want to start over in 2012 with some of that stuff. So how do we get that content across? So considerations we need to look at. MDT. If you're using MDT, unfortunately, MDT is awesome, but that throws a big wrench in the migration process. So if you have a straight Config Manager task sequence, we can migrate those across into 2012 just fine. If you have MDT, we can't. So there's a few ways, and I'll show you on a quick demo here, I'll show you the easiest way to address your MDT task sequences to get your content across. Additional considerations, in 2012 we have new task sequence templates. So if you're in Config Manager 2012, we really want you to be on MDT 2012 Update 1, which has got a whole bunch of templates that you probably didn't have with 2010 or maybe if you were on MDT 2008 and 2007. So there's some additional templates and new things. We really want you to start with clean MDT integrated task sequences or clean Config Manager task sequences, and instead move your content into those task sequences so that you're using the new stuff. Drivers, to be completely honest, re-import them. Don't even bother trying to migrate them. You're just going to give yourself headaches. It's an absolute nightmare trying to migrate drivers. There's very few clients I've worked with where they somehow or some way, shape, or form, somebody hasn't accidentally touched the source files, and that wreaks havoc on when you're actually trying to move things across because it doesn't actually exist where we think it exists. So honestly, the best recommendation on the driver perspective is simply re-import them. With PowerShell and everything else, it's really easy to do in 2012. We can re-import them. We can, based on the actual folder name that it has, we can automatically create a driver package based on that. We can automatically create categories. We can do all that stuff with PowerShell. Driver imports takes hours. So we queue up a PowerShell script, let it run, come back on Monday. You've got everything re-imported. Life's good. So that's really the best way to do from a driver perspective. Let me show you the best way to handle task sequences. Okay, so that came up. So let's say you have an MDT integrated task sequence. So this particular one is just a straight MDT 2010 task sequence. Pretty common scenario for 2007. And obviously there's a lot of stuff in here. Again, we had a full demo, but because of time I got to cut it short. But basically if you go through and try to migrate this, you'll end up with an error in the MIG control that says, you know, basically, what is this MDT stuff? I don't know how to deal with it. Even if you have MDT integration built in, the migration wizard doesn't know how to deal with it. So one option is you can go through this task sequence, you can remove all the MDT steps, and then you can move it across. That can be challenging for some people because these task sequences can get very big, and a lot of people don't necessarily understand all of the logic that's in here from an MDT perspective. So that's not necessarily the recommendation I would have. Instead, what I would recommend for you to do is, hopefully, when you've gone through this and done things, you've gone through and created, you've organized things. So something you probably want to grab is what you've done from a driver management perspective. So hopefully you have a nice group, and then underneath there you've got your 20, 30 models or whatever, but you've got it nicely organized. So I say, okay, I know this section is all my driver stuff. I don't want to recreate these steps and WMI queries and everything else. I know I need to move this. And then probably in your state restore phase, you've gone through and done a bunch of custom stuff with packages and, okay, I've got laptops, I need to install these apps, desktops, I need to install these apps. That's the meat and bones of things and maybe some other custom stuff you have. Again, every client I work with, I teach them to organize things so that it's always very easy to move stuff. So if you've got stuff all over the place, migration is going to be more and more challenging for you. So if you fortunately have gone through and done this, what you can do is you can actually go through and just create a completely blank task sequence, and then I'll actually just, if I can find a delete key on the Danish keyboard. Sorry, the resolution in this room was different than the last one, so we're kind of killing ourselves. So if you've got the two task sequences open, it's really easy to move content. So I can come up here and say, okay, you know what? I really need my driver stuff. I don't want to redo that. Come over here, paste that stuff. And I've got all my custom stuff, you know, in my state restore phase, my app installs, all that fun stuff. Really don't want to deal with that either. So let's go ahead and move that across. And so now what we've got is we've got a brand new task sequence with all my custom stuff that has no MDT logic in it. This task sequence will migrate just fine. And then in 2012, you build your new 2012 update one task sequence, open that up, open this up, put your stuff back. Voila, that is the easiest way to get your MDT stuff moved across in 2012. It's simple, you don't have to worry about all that stuff. Now you're on 2012, you've got a clean 2012 task sequence that's integrated and that's based on the new 2012 templates and all that stuff. So allegedly, if you go through into 2007, you upgrade to MDT 2012 update one and create a task sequence there and pull your stuff in there, it's supposed to migrate. I've had trouble with it. I've seen hit and miss. I know some people have said, oh, yeah, I've got it to work, and I know I have plenty of other people that haven't. All of that stuff and all that time and stuff is just not worth it. If you just do this method, you can migrate all your content in 2 minutes. So that's really, this is the recommendation from getting your MDT stuff across. As far as other OSD things, like I said, drivers, I know it for a lot of people are like, really, you want us to re-import? That's kind of a pain in the butt. But again, that is the best way, because trust me, if you don't do that, you're going to spend so much time trying to troubleshoot packages and everything else that didn't move across correctly. So, and that's it. We're actually over on time. So,
for the software update part, as Chris said, we don't do it.
We move update lists, and that's it.
You can do
nothing
it.
Nothing else is really of value to you. So,
and for the reports, we actually have a link to Pascal's report changer utility. Make sure you download that. It's completely free. It works, and you just use it to migrate your reports. And it's not a config manager thing, so it's actually a SQL reporting services migration tool, and it just works awesome because most of you have custom reports, and there is a pretty good chance that they will actually work in CM12, even though there is no guarantee. And with that, thank you all for coming. Yep. Have a great lunch.
Please fill out your feedback, and we'll stick around for questions. I know you guys had a lot.